listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is all about your ultimate life plan, which, according to our guests, begins where psychology meets spirituality and ends where passion meets purpose. Our guest today is Dr. Jennifer Howard, PhD, who is an internationally known licensed psychotherapist, a life and business coach, integrated energy healer, professional speaker, and a radio talk show host herself. Dr. Howard has over 20 years' experience dealing with mind-body psychology. She is a Huffington Post blogger and has appeared on numerous national television shows. Dr. Jennifer was named one of the top 25 celebrity doctors on Twitter, as well as being dubbed, and I quote, the funniest shrink on Twitter. So, Dr. Howard, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, thank you, Alan. I'm so excited to be here today and to be part of, you know, your show and all that you do for people. So thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're very welcome. And part of the process of having this show is to get information out to families. There's so many times in which I have dealt with families and they've said, I have no idea. I'll say, you know, what is your plan? I don't have a plan. Well, when I had a chance to read your book, I said, you know what? I now have something that we can share with them, which is the ultimate life plan. So thank you not only for writing it, but for working with the families as you do.
Thank you.
Now, as I was doing the introduction and as I was going through your website and such, I was thinking, you know, if you could share with all of us, you know, what is the difference between a basic psychology and mind-body psychology?
Well, you know, as most of you know, psychology, and I talk about this in Chapter 4, the formation of the ego, and psychology kind of began with Sigmund Freud. But starting in the 60s, probably, maybe in the late 50s, there were certain psychologists that really saw that there was a connection. It was also a spirituality, but the connection between the mind and the body. And, of course, now that's pretty well known. But back in the late 50s and early 60s, this was, you know, a strange thought. So looking at how it all works together, how our mind affects our body, our emotions affects our, you know, affect our body, our spiritual connection affects our body, because it's all one thing. But as I talk about in the middle part of my book, breaking it down into those four dimensions, which I know we'll get more into later, helps it work, you know, be workable. What are we thinking? What are we feeling emotionally? What are we sensing in our body? Those are different experiences, and we're the one person is having it. So,
right. Now, for everybody out there, for those of you that are sitting at your computer, you can open up another window right now and still continue to listen to us if you go to www.yourultimatelifeplan.com, and you can follow along with us a little bit. We're talking about Dr. Howard's book, you know, The Ultimate Life Plan, and it really does have – it breaks things down, and that's one of the things that I like. It breaks things down into different areas that allow us to look at the fact that there are multiple areas, and she breaks it down and then sort of shows how you bring it all together. So, and you mentioned the four stages or the four levels. Can you share with us those?
Sure. I mean, that's I give you a good running start before you get to this, the book. So, but the action physical dimension is obviously the physical body, but it's also these dimensions I talk about are mindsets. They are the way we view consciousness, the way we live our lives. And these are nested, meaning that this first one is nested in the other dimensions, and the biggest dimension would be the last dimension, which encompasses everything, which would be the spiritual. Mm-hmm. But the action physical is not only our physical body, but that way, that kind of narrow thinking, black and white thinking, this or that, very people we know, the fundamental end of the spectrum in religions, things like that. Then moving up to the next dimension, the formation emotional, you step into the world of emotion, and you finally find that the world has meaning. When we're in the first dimension, we're talking about people being very separate and very different, and we would have very much tribal thinking. But when we step into that next dimension, we might be the tribe of man, or mm-hmm. we might have many more things in common with people than we think we do. And then we move to the next dimension, which is the I have to look at it to remember, creation mental. The creation mental is really the, looking at the belief systems and even the next largest, bigger sphere, a mindset that we look into all the way at the very end of this. Now, we're talking about it like it's linear. And on one hand, it is linear, but it's not linear. But all the way from where we create thought, where we choose our thoughts. So, and then the last dimension is really the land of silence and grace.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the silence and grace. So you're saying this is more the spiritual?
It's the emanation spiritual, right?
Gotcha.
And from the holographic perspective, everything's available to us all at once. It's that linear way of thinking that helps us kind of work with it, to work with our belief systems as separate and notice our feelings as separate. I mean, I see that a lot, and I talk about that in the first part of the book a lot, where people will come to me. It happened last week when somebody said, I feel that, dot, dot, dot. And anytime you put the word that in front of a feeling, it's not a feeling. It's a thought.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I feel that
I'm upset. I feel that they did this. I feel that, you know, and that would mean that's a thought. So what's that feeling? I feel sad about it. I feel hurt. So I help you break down what are your feelings. And I think I talk a lot about that and that formation emotional. I actually give you the words because I saw as a practitioner, a lot of people don't know the words for their feelings, you know, sad or grief, or we don't learn that as children, most of us.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Now, one of the things that and when I as I was reading the book, and if you could share with all of us, I mean, what do you mean when you say to stay on our cutting or our razor edge?
Right. So this whole book is really about building a conscious life, which is the name of my radio show. And to stay on our cutting edge is to just stay with what happens in the moment, to be conscious, to be awake and aware, is actually to be gloriously alive. So to be aware of those dimensions we were talking about, to be aware of the sensations in our body, to be aware of our thoughts and our feelings separate from our connection to spirit. So being on our razor's edge is really staying awake to our next growth and development, to the next stirring inside of us that leads us to our next big venture and adventure in life. I mean, this book was definitely an adventure writing it.
Mm-hmm.
So those inner stirrings, they lead us. But if we're not paying attention to those inner stirrings, many of us live our lives kind of with tunnel vision, unconsciously, and end up in the last part of our lives thinking, what am I doing? Where am I going? What am I, even, you know, parents, too, to stay awake. So your parenting is alive and awake,
mm-hmm.
and not just from your own history. You know, so you really are on top of what's happening inside of yourself to help your child learn their own thoughts and feelings.
Definitely. Now, what do you say to the people that come in and say, being on the razor's edge is scary? because it represents so much change. It represents the unknown.
Yes, yes. I say, welcome to life, and so nice to meet you as a fellow journeyer. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm staying on my edge. I mean, that's as best I can. It doesn't mean we're standing on a precipice constantly hanging over the top, but you don't have to go that far. All you have to do is notice what irritates you, notice what upsets you, notice what makes you happy.
Mm-hmm. And draw towards it.
Right. It's so worth it. It's so worth it. And life's going to go by. And I mean, I remember, especially young people, they'll say, you know, oh, I'm too old to go to school. You know, they're like 30 or something. You're like, please, 30, 30, young. But 4 years is going to go by anyway. Your life is going to go by. Isn't it better to embrace it, to know it, to be with it, to be on your deathbed and say, dadgummit, I did that thing. I did this thing called life. I did a good job.
Exactly. You didn't sit back and go, I shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Right. And it's not just about climbing mountains. Uh-huh. It's about climbing inner mountains, too. I mean, I've had clients come to me, you know, they would say, I've lived my adventures. I'm always climbing the next mountain. Sometimes that's addiction. Sometimes that's avoidance. Sometimes people do those external adventures as a high or a way to avoid emptiness in their life. So that's what I mean by staying on the razor's edge. Sometimes it looks different than we think it is.
And that's a great point when you bring up the thing about the people that are climbing the mountains or doing the things that are out there as opposed to focusing on the things that are in here, you know, in our hearts and in our minds to avoid having to deal with those issues, you keep running to the next thing, whatever that thing may be or whatever that high may be.
Boy, that's it. And I see that, and it happens in subtle ways, too, just subtle ways. People who are always busy, their house is in perfect shape, they're busy, busy, cleaning, cleaning, busy, cleaning, 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 it's got to be cleaning, cleaning. Not that you'd have a messy, dirty house, but, you know, if you're always cleaning, what kind of anxiety is this driving you to do? People who have to see people all the time and have to go to parties and have to, I mean, some of that's youth, you know, when we're young, we're out, we're in the world, we're at parties, whatever, but to watch that, the question is, am I avoiding anything right now? Am I avoiding anything inside? And that's what you said, which is great, because those inside stirrings, which I said earlier, will lead us to the outside. And then it's fulfilling if it's supposed to be climbing a mountain. It's like, yeah, this is what I'm really led to do next, or not.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I think some of the things that we run into with some of the families that we work with is, you know, especially now the way the economy is, you know, they're both working and working hard to try to make a living and such, and then their child will run away and they'll say to me and they'll go, well, I don't know. I've done everything I possibly could to give them everything that they could possibly ever want, and I don't understand why they're running away or why they're doing drugs or why they're doing all these things. And then what we realize is that because you as the parents aren't there.
That's,
I mean,
right.
it's great that you're, you know, you're working hard and such, but that may not necessarily be what they need at that particular moment. So
that's so important what you're saying, because I see this all the time too, dealing with families and even just, you know, adults that regret their parents. This right now, our society, we're so externally driven, and we think that we have, like you said, have to give them more things. And the kids want more things. Of course they do. They're kids.
Sure.
But as adults, part of that is giving them limits and boundaries and saying, you got enough pairs of jeans. You have enough pairs of tennis shoes. That's enough. You don't need more.
Mm-hmm.
And to learn early not to have to keep up with the Joneses. Well, little Timmy down the street has those jeans. Well, good for little Timmy, but we're not going to do that.
Exactly.
And the parents don't want to hear the flack from the kids. And I think often the parents don't want to have to, it's hard to be a parent and to say no, no, and no some of the time. Parents don't want to have to say no, so they just give in. And I think they're doing their kids a disservice because they're not teaching their own children that internal discipline, that internal way to hold on to something and say, well, I either have to earn it myself or wait a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, but you're right. And oftentimes, you know, we take the path of least resistance because it's easy at that moment. And then, unfortunately, oftentimes we pay, or the child pays, you know, further down the road.
Right. Right.
Now, in listening to your show, you know, Building a Conscious Life, one of the things that you talk about is Conscious Living 2.0. Share with us a little bit about what Conscious Living 2.0 is and how can it change someone's life?
Well, you know, we were talking about how important being conscious is, and this book really gives people the tools. And Conscious Living 2.0 is the technology to really have a life that is awake and aware. There are so many choices in this book. I try to get at things from 50 different angles, so you can't get away from yourself, you know, because I do this with clients, you know. I see they're everybody, we do this ourselves. We try to escape. We don't even know we're doing it. We're just trying to get away from the pain. We're trying to escape in some way. And if we can really face what's there, we have true freedom. But if we're escaping it, we don't. So Conscious Living 2.0 really gives people the tools and the technology to be able to stay present and aware and awake and have freedom, have emotional, internal freedom. I mean, happiness, and I say this in the first chapter, is an inside job.
Yeah.
And these Conscious Living 2.0, you know, practices and principles and technology really help people, guide people toward that freedom and that happiness that we all so want in our lives.
Well, and I know we're not going to have time to go through everything that's in the book, but give us a couple of examples of things that people can start on that's going to make a difference and a noticeable difference.
Well, in chapter one, I talk about if you're not getting what you want, if your life isn't what you want, then you have subtle strategies of escaping yourself, which is what I said before. And I talk about those strategies in here. So often we're reaching for hidden payoffs. That's one thing people can think about, meaning.
Uh-huh.
I noticed for myself, and I said this before, but well, early on I was having trouble making my living bigger than a certain number. And I realized that I didn't want to make more money than my father had ever made. So I had a strategy in there to not hurt my father. He doesn't care.
Right.
But in my head, you know, so that's my strategy, is that I was going to not make, I had no idea this was going on until it was uncovered, until I uncovered it with somebody, my own therapy or one of my processes or one of my trainings. And I realized I don't have to keep that unhidden. So there's secret agreements we have going on that we don't know. There's hidden payoffs. Maybe you get more love if you stay dependent. So, you know, I've had clients for years not separate really from their parents, individuate completely because they don't want to hurt their mom, and their mom needs to have a job. So they stay little and small and immature and kind of flailing around because they want their parent to still have a job. That's a hidden payoff. Uh-huh. I get to have mommy's love. So what I'd have to do is risk mommy being mad at me, which she probably wouldn't be anyway, but maybe she would, but if I become all I can be. So if we're not reaching our goals, there's hidden agendas here. Another one might be I talked about this a little bit, but we're trying to jump over or bypass our problems. I see this so much with a lot of the kind of New Age books, and a lot of them are amazing and wonderful and helpful. But some of them kind of give people this simple answer, as if it's just this little thing. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, to stay on our razor's edge, to stay present, we have to stay clear with what we're feeling. And sometimes that means facing something difficult. I remember when I started thinking about writing this book, Alan, people said to me, write something simple. And I said, but first of all, people aren't simple. I've been doing this almost 30 years. People are not simple. None of us are. And life isn't simple. It is ultimately fulfilling and rich, but it's not simple. So we have to stay present to our feelings and not jump over them or want that quick fix.
And I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's one of those things to where it's not something that we can just sit here and chant happy, 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 and that's somehow going to make it happen, you know.
Right.
So I agree.
I'm so glad you said that. Yes, that's like those, yes, happy, 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 and all I have to have is happy thoughts, and life will be good.
Right. And then the first time that you don't have a happy thought, what do you do? You don't know what to do because you haven't figured out what do I do when this happens, because I didn't learn that. I only learned to keep saying happy, 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 happy.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And boy, that's such a brittle way to live. I see this all the time. That's what I mean by those kind of new agey books that say, you know, say happy, 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 and everything should be happy. And then, of course, it's not happy every minute because nobody's life is, and people die, and people get sick, and people lose jobs, and children run away, and, you know, stuff happens. So, right, how do we deal with our own internal life and then create that external life as best we can with whatever comes up? Life happens.
Yeah, and I think to add to that, you know, we can't protect our children from everything, because if we do, once they become an adult, they're going to have no idea as to how to deal with that. And one of the examples that I've given before is Freddie Prinze Sr. And again, for those young people out there, there is a Freddie Prinze Sr., not just the Freddie Prinze Jr. that you see on television now. But with Freddie Prinze Sr., he had everything. At a very young age, he was good looking. He was incredibly funny. He could make people laugh at the drop of a hat. He was starring in a television sitcom at a very young age. All of these things came to him, and then what happened? The first and nobody really ever said no to him. Nobody he had no downfalls. He had no negative experiences. And the first time that a girl broke up with him, he killed himself because he had no idea how you're supposed to deal with that feeling. You know, so when our children, you know, bump their knee, you know, skin their knee, or when you know, they're teenagers and the boy or girl breaks up with them, those little heartaches, those little problems, that's what helps build us to be the person that can handle something when something a little bigger comes along.
Absolutely. What you're talking about is what I talk about a lot in, well, Chapter 3, too, about your programming. I mean, I didn't know Freddie Prinze Sr. killed himself. I didn't know that piece. I'd forgotten it. Maybe I knew it at the time and forgot it. But talking about looking at your childhood programming, I mean, we all have little disappointments. I mean, but, you know, you're saying something really important, though. I don't want to jump off of what you're saying, because I see this so much in my practice now with younger people, like in their 20s, kind of the generation of our, you know, our children, I don't know your age, but I think you're close to my age. Our children, we didn't want to have, like you said, let them have disappointments. We tried to save them from disappointments. And life has lots of disappointments. We don't get the job we want. We don't get the girl we want. The husband leaves us even though we're trying our best. We lose our job. Our house burns down. I mean, I don't know. Life is full of those kinds of things. So how to really navigate life's disappointments and build the ego strength that when the storm comes, like you're saying, we have that inner strength that says, well, I'll make it through this. I don't know how right now, but I'll figure it out. I'll call my therapist. I'll call my friends. I'll talk to people. I'll get support. I'll go to groups. I'll whatever I need to do to make it through this. I'll survive it.
Yep. Absolutely.
That inner strength, because that's where it all comes from. It's an inside job.
Well, while we're talking about an inside job, let's talk a little bit about inner wisdom. So I know you talk about it in your book, and you talk about how people can really get in touch with their inner wisdom. And when I read that, I thought this is so great, because I think so many people don't really know how to go in and touch that and then feel confident about it.
Well, and I talk about in the chapter, this is chapter 5, that helping people really discern the difference between the voice of their programming that I talk about in Chapter 3, what we were just talking about, that childhood programming that we got from our culture and our parents that may not be our wisest voice. One kind of silly example is the voice that says, have more ice cream, is probably not your wiser voice, right? just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that wise voice, how to discern the difference. So when that inner voice says, you know, this isn't the right man for me, or this isn't the right job for me. I remember when I was in my 20s, I tried to be in real estate for a very short time, and I was terrible at it, really. It was commercial real estate. It's just, I'm so much better doing what I do now. But I kind of felt like my gut was tight every time I, you know, I was forcing myself to do it. I did it for like 3 years. Part-time, but 3 years, I was pushing myself to do it, and I didn't know how to listen to myself fully. So when those inner signals, so I talk about in this chapter about what are the different languages that our body or mind would speak to us. So I talk about it you might get a message in your bodily sensation or that gut that I was talking about, that my gut kind of knew the answers for me. And then there's that auditory. Sometimes you hear an answer. I'm not talking about hearing voices. I'm talking about your own inner, you know, voice that kind of says, don't do that, or do that, or this is right, or turn down that way, or you make that phone call, and you think, why am I calling this person? It turns out they have the job you were looking for, or they turn out to be the husband you were looking for, or those mental images where we just have a flash of, oh, gosh, this is going to happen, or I'm going to call that, or this, you know, getting in that inner direction, or that direct knowing where we just know the answer, and we don't know how we know the answer, but it turns out to be right, or that sense of kind of smell and memories, and then there's even external guides and angels that can guide us sometimes. But to know the difference between, and that's kind of takes experimenting, doesn't it? Kind of testing, like, let me see if this is right for me. Putting our feet in the water and not feeling like we have to jump into something completely.
Yep. Now, we are talking with Dr. Jennifer Howard. The book is Your Ultimate Life Plan. We're going to take a break. We will be right back. And again, while we are taking this break, feel free to go to the website, open up another window, yourultimatelifeplan.com, and follow along with us. We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
We're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We are talking with Dr. Jennifer Howard. And while we were taking a little break, there was an inner voice for me that started thinking, remember last night when the inner voice was saying, chocolate chip cookies, make chocolate chip cookies?
Absolutely. Are they gluten-free? I'm coming over.
No, they're the Toll House kind, the ones that have all the goodies.
I tell you, you know, I think I'm saved by certain things because I have a wheat allergy, so I think in a way I'm saved from. But I make plenty of hay with chocolate though, without it. So there you go.
Now the other thing that came through, we got an instant message that came through during the commercial, and this one reads. It says, my ex-husband is using our daughter's confusion over our divorce to make himself appear the victim. He provides no structure, which negates my attempts to give my daughter structure and balance. He is loving that I am being painted the bad guy. It is depressing and debilitating personally. Do you have any processes in your book that may be helpful in dealing with this situation?
Well, I don't have anything, of course, directly for that. But yes, what you need to know is that you're doing the right thing by continuing to have the structure. And you may have to be the bad guy for a short amount of time. The child will grow up, and eventually you can explain, this is why I did it, and this is what I did. And you may end up smelling like a rose at the end of the day. So, you know, to have confidence in what you're doing, maybe try to see a family person and bring dad, even though you're divorced, you and dad and the child in there, or just you and dad to make agreements. And to handcuff that you're doing the right stuff, bless your heart. I know it seems hard. Get yourself some support. And yes, this book will really help support that ego strength in you that says, I know I'm doing the right thing, even if I have to look like the bad guy right now.
Well, and I couldn't agree more. Again, having read the book, I was going to say pretty much the same thing, is that it may not necessarily fix the problem on the other side, but that's not within your control. But as you just said, having you feel comfortable and in the fact that you are doing the right thing, and I also agree with what you said, that sometime further down, I mean, it's really tough at that point, but sometime further down the road, it may be when, you know, after they leave the home and go out on their own, and then they start looking back and going, wow, you know, how tough was it for this mom in this situation to stick to their guns?
Exactly.
And be more, they were so focused on in this case, my well-being, that, you know, they were willing to do that. I think that speaks volumes, but yeah, I agree with you.
So that speaks volumes. It's so true. It you know, to know that you're actually being the good parent, even if you're painted as the bad parent, to have confidence that you're going to help your child, you know, be a more functional human being, and it's a hard job. And I think, you know, we have to look at, as a parent, that you're not, you know, you're not the friend, and you're there to be a parent, not a friend. And
yep.
To not get your friendship needs made off, you know, from your children, because they need to, they're going to not like you sometimes because you have to say things they don't want to hear.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the points that I bring up at times talking with parents, to put it in proper, in a structure that maybe they can understand, is, and I said, think about the fact, do you think that your 15-year-old child needs a 45-year-old best friend?
Yep.
They don't. And that's where you're at. Now, when they think of it with somebody else being 45 and being their child's best friend, they don't like it. But yet, when it's them, somehow that makes it okay.
Well, you know why? Because it's triggering their own childhood wounding. It's triggering their own need to be liked. It's triggering their own parent that didn't accept them or something. This is triggering something from their programming in their childhood that they need their child to affirm them. And it's hard to not have, you know, do that with our children, but our children need to really, it's our job to parent. It's like me being a therapist. It's the same role in a funny way that, you know, it's not my client's job to tell me, they liked my session, it was good, you know, I have done so much for, you know, it's not their job to make me feel better, you know.
Right.
Just that's like a parent. It's not your kid's job to make you feel better. You do what you think you're supposed to as a parent, and half the time they're going to be mad at you, and, you know, so be it.
Now, I mean, how would you describe the difference in families that are looking at doing something like this, the value of going in and having an entire family therapy session versus just some individual sessions, or a combination of both?
I think combination of all. You know, we're speaking in so generalities, it's hard, but I think combination of all. I work, and my husband also works, we're both therapists, with families as they're getting a divorce, and with the children and the adults, and, you know, how to structure it and how to have this work as cleanly as possible. And if, like this woman, let's say this husband wouldn't go with her, she still needs to go because she's going to have
right.
to be the only adult present, period.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then and in getting the children there, at least the children can hear, you know, what they need to hear in that situation. And maybe if they continue whatever that period of time when they're with dad, whatever they learn, if they keep taking it back to dad, maybe dad is going to see some sort of benefit and change his mind in that situation and get involved as well.
Yeah, and yet you don't want to make your child have to go fix your ex-husband or ex-wife. So,
right.
you know, it's a funny balance. You have to do it as adults and set up the boundaries as best you can when the kid is away at the other house, that they still have to go to bed at X time and they have to call you and report in. And they, you know, I mean, it depends on the people. I mean, it's complicated, divorces, and there's a lot of them. So,
yeah.
It's a lot to think about. But even people who are, you know, married and still living together, negotiating parenting is a challenge. Negotiating money is a challenge. Negotiating life. Welcome to humanity, I like to say to everybody. Welcome. I'm so glad to have you. Here we are all together in this thing called life, doing our best.
Right, and you can and you can choose to seek the best, or you can choose to seek the worst.
Right, you can choose to say, I'm going to take this on. Like, I hope this, you know, I want this book. I mean, the book is up for a few awards. I don't even know if I told you that. It's up for a few awards right now, and it was an Amazon bestseller right out of the gate. So we're, you know, I'm proud of this book. I think it can help a lot of people. As you know, it's written from many, now, there's so much in it. It's written from so many angles that most people can get, you know, something out of it. And I think a lot of people could get, you know, quite a bit out of it, because it's just, it's just chocked full of stuff.
Right.
Meditations, questions.
And that's exactly the feeling that I got from it as well, was that it not only covered a lot of areas, but to me, it does it in a very kind of a feel-good thing. In other words, it's sometimes I have read some books that are written by doctors, and there's so much jargon and so much sort of, you know, doctorese in it that I'm not feeling the book while I'm reading it. What I liked about yours was I felt like it was written for all of us, you know, not a textbook that was going to be, you know, read in school somewhere. So.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I hope so. I struggled so with some of the chapters. Writing a book.
Again, now while we're talking about the book, and I made some notes of things that I thought would be good things to bring up, and one of them, now you say in there that each of us has like about six stubborn issues that constantly get in our way. You know, share with our audience what you mean by that, and maybe what they are.
Well, I think most people over a certain age, I would say even just 25, kind of know that they, if they're paying attention, that they kind of run into the same thing. They don't feel like they're enough. You know, they've had every boyfriend who's similar. Let's say every boyfriend's an addict, or, you know, they kind of hit the same feeling in themselves, or suddenly all their friends disappear for no reason. They have no idea what happened, or there's kind of a pattern that happens. We have to start watching these patterns for ourselves. And I'm being funny when I say six issues. It's pick a number. But
right.
I think we all kind of incarnate or are born into these issues that we're here to kind of work with. It's kind of like, you know, the old joke when they say if everybody threw their troubles in the pot, everybody pulled their own troubles back out. You know, soul choke. Well, I think if we can learn to really know these struggles and really work them, it's kind of like the pearl in the oyster, the sand in the oyster that creates that pearl, that irritant, that helps us grow. So to take on these six issues, in quotation marks, the things that have bugged us, the things that keep returning, and let ourselves go deeper with them. Challenge yourself to go deeper with them. That's that razor's edge again. Challenge yourself just to go just a little deeper with them and have a little more freedom with it if it comes back around again.
Yep, I agree. And we have another, we have another instant message coming over.
Good.
So this is someone who is responding to what you're talking about right now. This one says, I agree. We all seem to have stuck points and destructive patterns that we just can't reverse. The older I get, the more I find some of my closest friends in a cycle of drama. It is almost as if they can't make it through the week without creating conflict with someone around them or finding a physical ailment to complain about. Is this just a part of aging, or can it be reversed?
Well, I don't know, but it can be healed. What we can do is challenge ourselves to look at it. I mean, you're not their therapist, you're their friend, but you could say, you know, Sally, I noticed that every week there's a drama with a neighbor or something. It's just interesting to me. I wonder what that's about for you. Because what I've got to tell you between you and me is if there's drama around them all the time, there's a part of them that likes that. That's what feeds them somehow. That makes them feel alive. So they would have to challenge their ability to be alive without external drama. And then you can challenge yourself, do you want to talk to them every week if they're always dramatic? Can you say, you know, I'm so sorry, I love you, honey, but I only got 5 minutes. How you doing? Okay, I got to go.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know what, I've had other people drop out. You know, I don't want to hear you talk about George anymore because, you know, it's the same cycle with George, and I can't help you. Your therapist needs to deal with that with you, and I don't want to talk about George. I'll talk about something else.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Put boundaries in place. You know what I'm talking about, right? Putting boundaries in place with that.
Absolutely, and in essence, you're saying, you know what, my drama quotient with you is filled. I can't take any more.
Right. Or, you know, and it's good in a way, if you can do it sweetly, kindly, to say, you know, I hear you struggling with George every time we talk, and I don't know what to say because you don't want to hear anything. So, you know, I think we just shouldn't talk about it because I don't think it's good. I'm feeding it. It's like sometimes we're feeding their drama if we go, really, what happened now? Yep. Almost look like we're watching a reality show or something. We're, like, feeding it.
Yep. You know, and again, you know, I'm in going over at your website. One of the things that I saw is that you do seminars and you do workshops. Can you tell us a little bit about the seminars and workshops that you do, and do you have any coming up?
Yes, thank you. We are developing two things out of this book. I've already gotten a lot of requests, so people can go sign up at my website, and then they'll be in touch with things, or please email me and let me know you're interested. We're putting together a mentor group for professionals looking at using the principles of your ultimate life plan, and we're also putting together a mentoring group for people who aren't professionals. Really, we're going to do that online, and right now I don't have any planned. I just got back from a book, author read and a book signing in Tennessee. We're going to put that up on the web real soon. Got to do some editing on it, but so we don't have any traveling planned in this moment, although by summer we'll have some more planned. But that anybody who's interested in that, you know, let me know, because we're going to put that together, and if you're on that list, it'll be easier just to, you know, let you know immediately that we're doing it.
All right, that's great. And again, you can go to, it is yourultimatelifeplan.com, and that's where you can put your email in and get whatever information as it's scheduled. But if you, and again, with the seminars, some of the things that I liked was, you know, having subjects such as, you know, creating lasting change, you know, lessons in maturity, you know, the power of change, how to accept it, how to embrace it. You know, these types of things, you know, to me really seem like they were the things that a lot of people are going through. You know, so in fact, as I was looking at it, and I saw that you have couples retreats, you know, where mm-hmm. you know, where you can discuss having even greater relationships. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to follow this one because I'm signing up. You know, so but I think that's great. Is that if we're going to have an ultimate life plan, why not have it for both of us?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, I love working with couples, and I've done it a lot through the years. And, you know, you don't have to have a terrible – you don't have to wait till it's terrible. You can just – it's good, but you want it better. You know, it doesn't have to be bad. It's like I tend to work with pretty successful people who, you know, say one area of their life, they're superstars, and the other area they're challenged, because we all have challenges.
Yep.
You know, that's – yeah, I love to do this. I love teaching, so it's fun to teach. And like you said, this book, I wanted it to be a transmission, like as if you're in a workshop with me.
And that's – you know, yeah, that's kind of the feel that I had. And again, for anybody out there, when I get books and I know that I'm going to have the guest, I read while pedaling. So I am at the gym and I pedal for an hour at a time, and that's how I'm able to, you know, to get through things in a week, you know. So but yes,
that's right.
Yeah, and that was what I was getting from this, is I'm going, okay, this is great. And again, you don't have to have problems. You just have to look at it and go, yeah, that could be better. Oh, I like that. That could be better too. So it's a way to sort of get into the world of that book, because I'm focused on that, and see what are the things that not only do I think the audience can gain from it, but I look at it and go, what can I gain too?
That's wonderful. You know, I like to edit on a stepper. Isn't that funny? I go to the gym with my edit, and I have my pencil, and I'm stepping and going, oh, that's – because it's almost like I got more oxygen in my brain or something, and it's like I think good to edit. That's great that you bicycle and you pedal and read. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and there are studies that say that our brain is actually functioning better if we are reading, studying, or doing anything while we are doing some form of exercise. So we're opening ourselves up to even greater heights.
Yay!
So, and speaking of exercise, but I mean, and again, in the book, I saw you have exercises in there that people can do. Can you share with us? We've got about 5 minutes. Share with us some exercises that we can do today to ease stress and open up our potential like never before.
I can't believe we're coming to the end. We only have 4 minutes, 5 minutes. Wow.
Yeah, it just flew by.
It flew by. It was so fun being with you. I'm trying to think of what would be one of the better ones. I'm thinking about the multi-dimension awareness practice, but just being present yourself right now, and just right now take a deep breath in and out, and just notice your body right now. Notice perhaps where it's more relaxed, where it's more tense. And we could do a whole thing on the body where we go in and have that relax, but now just notice what you're feeling emotionally. Kind of content, sad, stirred up, grief, happy, just whatever. And all of it's good. It's just where you are. It's all fine. And then notice where your thoughts are. And what are you thinking? And where does your thoughts go? And where have they been going as you've been listening? And then notice, if you can, just your body and that connection to spirit or God or whatever you want to call it. Just feel that connection, whatever that means to you. So that's just a quick presencing exercise, and there's so many meditations. And on the website, there's meditations we're adding all the time, meditations for people to use that I'll guide them in.
Right, yeah, and again, if you go to the website, as we discussed earlier, you can go to the virtual meditation room.
And right, so and that's on my other website, which you can connect through with my blog, but drjenniferhoward.com.
Okay, good, yeah. All right, yeah. I went to both of them, so I didn't realize that things were only on one or only on the other, but
that's
great.
Okay. They're all connected, and I want everybody to know that you're worth the time, you're worth a little bit of time for yourself. To take 5 minutes in the morning to just sit and breathe and be and notice yourself. To notice yourself when you're driving in your car or walking down the street. To notice yourself when you're standing in line at the bank. To take a moment to present yourself 3 or 4 times a day. Also, it's going to help your blood pressure and your heart and your organs and your system and the stress levels and your physical body. That's where that mind-body connection comes in again. Mm-hmm. And to know that you're really worth reading this. I mean, my book's the kind of book that you can, you know, you can read it in a week, like Alan did, or you can take your time with it too. You could read 2 pages a day. I mean, you can do it at your own pace. You can do the exercises. Some people have read it through like you did, Alan, and they go back, read it again, and do the exercises. So they just kind of get a sense of it the first round through. And I love questions or thoughts or ideas or anything. Anybody wants to email me at info@drjenniferhoward.com or to go to yourultimatelifeplan.com and hit the contact button. And you've been a delight, sir.
Well, thank you, and as have you. And again, I've been looking forward to this one. I've listened to some of your shows, so I've heard you, talk to some of your guests, and I just, I thought when Jan told me that we were going to have you on the show, and I was like, this is great. I am so looking forward to this. So, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for what you're doing for families. And I will be going to the website, looking at the workshops and the seminars, and I hope everybody else will do the same.
And, I hope to talk to you another time about something else, just because you're a delight.
Well, absolutely. I would love to have you back, or maybe next time I can go on yours.
I think we need to do that.
I like it.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Have
you
a
so
great
much.
Week. You're very welcome. And for
you
everybody
too.
Out there, thank you for listening to Answers for the Family. And be with us next week as we will bring you someone else who will educate, entertain, and inspire.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.